What I'm about to do on your podcast is a first. Another rendition of the Pais effect, and then you drive that plasma, which is a nonlinear medium, far from equilibrium. Super effing magic happens, brother. Let's just leave it at that. I cannot say more than that. That maybe is too much to say. The greatest thing to wish for is something that helps others. The idea of unification, for example, again, Project Unity is so beautiful. This idea, come together. Unless we come together, this world will fall apart. And then we all lose. It makes no sense. Unification. That should be the ultimate need of mankind.
Have you ever wondered if your company is maximizing the return of your data investment? Are you collecting the right data required to make informed decisions? Is there more that can be learned from our data? Coyus Institute can answer these questions and help you discover the hidden value within your data sets by utilizing a well-rounded approach to data analysis. Stop leaving value behind and start increasing the return on your data investment. The next generation of data analysis has begun. We are pioneers in pattern discovery. We are Coyus Institute.
I've seen so many of your podcasts. You're quite a celebrity.
Well, I mean, I don't know, man. It's just been a crazy journey going through all of this. And I was so happy when Brett Tingley messaged me and said, "Oh, hey, Sal wants to get in touch with you." And then we started emailing, and it was just like, it was a really good thing to get connected to you, because you know, you're such an interesting guy, Sal, and I'm looking forward to jumping into, you know, learning a little bit more about you and about the science that you've been undertaking and where it's all leading in your opinion. So, I mean, it's an exciting time in terms of all of the discussions happening with the, you know, the U.S. government in relation to UFOs right now. How do you feel about the whistleblower that recently came out, David Grush?
Because I'm on this podcast as a private person, so the Navy has absolutely nothing to do with this. I choose not to comment, since I am a civil servant, Hatch Act and all, among other things. It's best that I do not comment from that point of view. Interesting technology. The stuff that I've been doing, the Pais effect, the superforce, it's not going anywhere, basically. The academic community is completely indifferent to it. The Navy is not doing absolutely anything about it as far as I know. And so it's in limbo, as they say.
Can you give people just a little bit of a background about yourself and your career history? Because not that many people outside of the kind of alternative propulsion or even the UFO community are familiar with who you are. So it'd be good to get anyone who might not know just a little bit of a background on your career history and how it ended up with these technologies being proposed to the U.S. Navy.
Well, let me start with origins. I was born in Romania, Bucharest, Romania, as a matter of fact. So I'm of Romanian origin. You can call me American apple pie made in Romania. So still tastes great, as they say. As far as these so-called the Navy UFO patents, that's what I spoke to Brett Tingley about it. And that's, I believe this was more of a popularizing role that the drive, the war zone did. In a way, by calling them that, they have made sure that no physicist will ever touch this with a 23-foot pole, unfortunately, which is a bad thing. Kurt Jaimungal tried to introduce me to some physicists, especially one that I had a podcast with. He's very well known at Brown University, also very well known in the physics community. That didn't seem to go anywhere, though, even though I tried to make it go somewhere, and so did Kurt. So thank you very much to Kurt for doing that. This whole thing started, I was part of a Naval Innovative Science and Engineering project, a proposal. This thing came to my mind when I saw the Heaviside, the four equations with four unknowns. They're derived from Maxwell's equations. As you well know, the Maxwell equations are, the original equations are written in quaternion form, and there are 20 equations, 20 unknowns, extremely hard, extremely difficult to solve. However, Oliver Heaviside, or also Josiah Gibbs, both of them are your compatriots, as a matter of fact, both of them British. They were able to derive four equations with four unknowns. It's called the Heaviside version of Maxwell's equations. Those are the Maxwell equations that physicists use nowadays.
I want to get into the superforce and the Pais effect theory, and these are very important parts of what you're trying to propose as a, essentially, I would say, a unified field theory with the superforce proposal. So I would like to get into that with you, but I do want to keep on the patterns for a minute, just because, as you said, with the reporting in the drive and then being dubbed as the UFO patents, this might have created a bit of a stigma around the proposals you were giving. But yeah, the U.S. Navy was definitely at least taking it seriously. And I think it was because of these highly exotic proposals that they were dubbed as UFO patents, because you included gravitational wave generator, inertial mass reduction device, plasma compression fusion systems. You know, these are all very exotic proposals for beyond next generation energy and propulsion technology. And you even had the proposal for a hybrid underwater aerospace vehicle that could operate in oceans, atmosphere, the vacuum of space. And these are basically the same capabilities that have been attributed to UFOs by U.S. Navy operators and, you know, many others in the over the years. So I guess the big question is, can you build that stuff, Sal?
Don't forget the room temperature superconductor.
And the room temperature superconductor, yes.
This is one thing a lot of people have not been paying close attention to. However, Dr. Viktor Lakhno of the Russian Academy of Sciences, and also a member of the Keldysh Research Center, wrote a paper, an archive paper in 2019, titled "The Way from High to Room Temperature Superconductivity." And in it, reference 10, and also the final paragraphs of this paper, basically say that there is a possibility that this room temperature superconductor could work. This is not based on a chemical superconductor, so it has nothing to do with the materials the superconductivity is generated from. It's really an active physical superconductor. He uses something called the bipolaron mechanism, but I will not go there. It's heavy physics. It's condensed matter physics and then some exponential power. The best way to describe it, he really surprised me by actually saying that he summarizes so well. He basically says, Pais uses a alternating magnetic field to disrupt the surface superconductive material and thereby form something called a Bose-Einstein condensate. Really, you can think of it as the macroscopic quantum coherent wave. So everything moving as if it was one entity. And then he says something very interesting. He says, and then he uses an alternating current to move the condensate. That's exactly what's happening. When you look closely, he really hit the nail on the head. And I'm amazed that no one is trying to actually build their room temperature superconductor. I actually had to change the name, thinking the patent examiner might at least be agreeable to issue an allowance. And I called it a high temperature superconductor. So the first was Navy Case PAX 233, and then it became Navy Case PAX 333. It's interesting, that number. It's a powerful number. It's a divine number. So I was extremely happy when I when I saw it, it gave me a little bit of a delusion of grandeur there, thinking that maybe now it'll push it toward becoming an allowance. No, he still rejected it, unfortunately. So was the plasma compression fusion device. It's very interesting that the two patents that are least controversial got rejected. And the three that were most controversial, the high-frequency wave generator, the craft using an inertial mass reduction device, and the high-energy electromagnetic field generator that we actually tried to run an experiment on, they were allowed. And it's incredible that the high-frequency gravitational wave generator was allowed as a first office action. I mean, that not only that, if you look at the primary examiner, extremely well-versed in the art, it was a top-notch individual, that should have sent waves through the community.
Some of them were refused, but then your CTO, the Chief Technical Officer of the Naval Aviation Enterprise, personally wrote a letter addressed to the patent officer, right? To the examiner, stating that the U.S. needs these patents to be accepted because, and I believe the reason was that the Chinese are already investing significantly in this area so that we need these to go through. That was what the reporting in the Drive stated, that the CTO had written a letter saying, hey, look, the Chinese are working on this. We need these to go through, and then that prompted the acceptance of the patents. Is that accurate?
That is not accurate. As a matter of fact, that made the primary examiner, Mr. Philip Bonzel,
uh-huh.
It's a very, very erudite, very extremely well-educated in the art. Let's just say that. Very technically apt. He said, what are you talking about here? We're talking about magnetic fields on the order of 10 to the 9 Tesla, electric fields on the order of 10 to the 18 volts per meter. You talk about neutron star capability here. You know, I had to convince him by actually, we had a phone interview, an examiner interview. And then we, based on that examiner interview, where I actually went from the Heaviside version of Maxwell equation, showed exactly how the electric field becomes, and I'm going to use some mathematical terms here, but if you refer to my papers, you'll immediately understand what it's all about. The electric field was on the order of sigma divided by epsilon zero. The magnetic field, also known as the B field, the magnetic induction, also known as the magnetic flux density. So the B field was mu sub zero times sigma times V, V being the velocity. And when you actually do the math, you come to the realization that it's actually saying E is on the order of CB, because that velocity in its Emax divided by Bmax form is the speed of light. The speed of light being, of course, the maximum velocity that can be achieved within the understanding of the quantum vacuum that we have currently. So let's stay with Einstein's special relativity. Let's not diverge to the possibilities. Let's stay within the norms of physics as they are now written. Those two equations, the E and the B field, they basically say E divided by B equals C. Because C is also, okay, C squared. So the speed of light in vacuum squared is on the order of 1 divided by mu 0, which is the magnetic permeability in free space, and epsilon 0, which is the magnetic...
So, my brother, this is so fluent for you, the physics talk. You've lost me about 4 minutes ago.
Maybe one day you should get Mr. X involved. You know,
yeah, Mr. X would understand, but I'm afraid when it comes to the physics XYZ device, I'm losing it, and I would like to believe that there are some physics aficionados within my audience, but just so that everyone's not trying to, you know, focus too hard on what you're saying here, the main drawback, at least from the conventional science perspective, is that there's too much energy requirements for these proposals, right? So what's the fix for that? Like, what exactly, how do we get around the neutron star levels of energy to create compact fusion reactors or inertial mass reduction devices?
The whole idea is in frequencies of vibration, all frequencies of spin, but let's stick with vibration. Another way, this is the first, by the way, what I'm about to do on your podcast is a first, another rendition of the Pais effect that you'll never see anywhere, not even with Perplexity.ai. We're talking about AI-driven search engines. Not even there will you see this rendition of the Pais effect. So here goes a human being trying to explain his own concept in a different manner. All right, here goes. Maybe nothing, maybe everything. The Pais effect is really the generation of extremely high energy densities produced by accelerated oscillation of a non-equilibrium plasma. That is another way, and I think a very crucial way of stating the Pais effect. When you look into the oscillation of a plasma, especially one that goes at the plasma oscillation frequency, and anyone that is in plasma physics will realize what that omega square is all about, you can get extremely high energy densities by vibrating a non-equilibrium plasma at its oscillation frequency. Let's just leave it at that. I cannot say more than that. That maybe is too much to say, but it has to be done under certain conditions. The whole idea being we're dealing with non-linearities. Non-linearities have always spoken to energy amplification. All you have to do is look back to the work of Ilya Prigozhin circa 1973. I call it the Prigozhin effect. It's very interesting how chaotic, seemingly chaotic structures can self-organize based on a triad of criteria, let's call it. In a medium that's nonlinear, say the plasma, if you introduce a constant or constantly driven energy flux, and then you drive that plasma, which is a nonlinear medium, far from equilibrium, super effing magic happens, brother. And the truth of the matter is, I can say it better than that, and I can say it in any other way. Of course, there's certain things that I cannot say on this because we don't want the adversary to get this. And unfortunately, we live in a world. Do you know why I really love your podcast? I love to theories of everything and you, Project Unity, are just humble. Again, because of its name, Project Unity. I mean, that's what we need to do, brother. We need to come together. We are all brothers and sisters, bro. Unless we come together and bring to a solution, we will never reap the fruits of these technologies. And I'll just leave it there.
Well, that's what, you know, and I appreciate that, brother, and I really do appreciate that. I called Project Unity its name because I believe that there has to be a form of symbiosis between spirit and science, between logic and intuition, these two kind of hemispheres of perceiving reality. We need to find a way to move these two closer together instead of them being completely opposed, because I think that's what's really created this world that we now see, is this kind of spiritually suppressed, technologically sophisticated civilization. And I would like to think that this might just be a part of our evolution, and that this is just a process of kind of ironing out the creases and the developmental barricades that we have to jump over as we evolve as a species. And, you know, this is just part of growing and developing. When you look at the way the world is right now, I mean, do you get a sense of optimism in the long run? How are you feeling about...
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do. It has to do with a force of unification. That's why I brought up the super force. Because the super force, this... Again, I resort to formulas because once My delusions of grandeur won't die. I still believe that one day some member, you know, I will be the Hans Albane to Enrico Fermi. It's a long story on how Hans Albane's idea of magnetohydrodynamics were actually, he was derided at every turn until one day in a conference, the great Enrico Fermi said, "I see it." And soon followed Hans Albane's, how should I say, meteoric rise. Until that point, I'm still hoping one day somebody will realize. And why not the superforce? It's so beautiful because it's, again, Occam's razor, simplicity and minimalism. The very formula of it, and I know, don't just stick with formulas, but it is such a beautiful formula. It's almost on par with E equal MC squared. C to the fourth divided by big G. C to the fourth, the very essence of everything and all, the speed of light, the very structure that unites us all, the quantum vacuum. That is representative of the quantum vacuum, highly nonlinear to the fourth power, divided by what? The universal gravitational constant, Newton's constant, big G. Can go bigger than big G, even though it's extremely small. In the denominator, it becomes an incredible amplifier, adding to that C to the fourth effect. I'm just saying, you have to see the beauty of that formula. And not only that, that superforce exists at every point in space and time, meaning what? Quantum entanglement. We are all one. That's what the superforce proves. Scientists have to look into the notion of the superforce to understand its implications. It's huge. It comes right out of the Schrodinger equation, the very foundation of quantum mechanics. And because it's in the Schrodinger equation, it must also be in the Dirac equation. What's the Dirac equation? But Schrodinger equation plus special relativity of Einstein. You see what I'm saying? It's there, man. They just have to believe, to let go of their inhibitions. And just look at the beauty of this formalism. And not only that, it's not just, abstract mathematical acrobatics. It's not this humongous equation that just keeps on going. It's simple. It's beautiful. See, it's real.
Sal, this is a reason why I really like you. And I think that even though I'm not a physicist, I feel drawn to trusting you because you are very clearly a very intuitive type of scientist. You draw a lot of information and inspiration from that kind of eureka, a creative energy. I can see it almost radiating off of you as you describe these physics formulas, and you see what a lot of people don't see, including myself, just because it's not necessarily my wheelhouse. You see the poetry of the mathematics and the poetry of the formula. And that is what makes me, as a layman, put trust in you, because you feel almost like a Tesla, like the way in which he spoke about his intuitive, almost downloads of information and interpretations of the physics and the science in a poetic way. And this is, in essence, that unity between intuition and logic, or spirit and science. It's that appreciation of the underlying beauty of something you're looking at analytically and saying, look, we can make tools from this. We can bring tools into this world that are scientific, but they're coming from this fundamental essence of life. And that is a spiritual essence to a lot of people, including myself, even if I can't label it, and I wouldn't label it. And like Tesla said himself, there is a core at the center of the universe, at the center of all creation, where all of our inspiration comes from. And he said, if I can remember the quote correctly, he said, I haven't located the position of this core, where it exists, but I know it exists. I know it is out there.
Exactly,
my bro. And that's what I get from you. That's the feeling I get from you, is you have this intuitive way of looking at the beauty of something that a lot of people just see as old maths and formulas and jargon. You see it in a different way, which is why a lot of the scientists look at you in a different way, because you, my friend, are an outlier, and the outliers are pretty much almost always later appreciated in life. Even outside of science, there's just so many different people in different disciplines who are laughed at and said, oh, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. And then later down the line, people catch up to that intuition. Would you say you're a very intuitional person, intuitive person?
Brother, you have, you know, F the Nobel Prize, F everything. What you have called it, the poetry of mathematics, you have done me the greatest credit of all time. And to call me another Tesla's brother, I'll put it this way. If I was wearing a hat, I would tip it to you, sir. Physics without philosophy.
Yes.
Is like a seed without water. Fruitless. Unbelievable that a lot of physicists have just let philosophy, they almost make fun of it. I think one person that's still a great physicist, in my opinion, Carlo Rovelli, he still has that in him. He is also a great philosopher. I admire that man deeply, as I do Abhay Ashtekar. He's another great one. You know, this idea of quantum bounds, it speaks to the superforce. Let me just say one thing. Well, I'll say many things if you let me, but this is very interesting. I believe there's almost like a trifecta of creation going on here. There's the super force leading to the super bang, leading to super intelligence. Have you ever questioned why in our brain is 100 billion neurons? On the order of 100 billion neurons. And in the observable universe, it happens to be what? On the order of 100 billion galaxies. And what did Anthony Parrott, the great Anthony Parrott, say about the universe being almost what?
Almost like a giant thought, instead of a giant machine.
We are talking about a super sentience here, sir.
Yeah.
We are part of something so beautiful and so great. And that's why we must come together. We really are. All is one. Yes, I know it goes back to, what was the name? Trismegistus?
Yeah, Hermes Trismegistus, and the Hermetic principles. And yes, as above, so below, the microcosm and macrocosm.
Yeah. Right on.
All literally got the staff of Hermes on my arm right there, man.
Yes. Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. I resonate a lot with the philosophical principles of Hermeticism and the teachings of Hermes. And it's again, like you said, this teaching ultimately is that we are one. We're all one. Individuals having an individual experience, but ultimately we are a singular entity, which I'm still trying to understand what that really means, because that's a hard thing for a human being to comprehend. I mean, it's like trying to comprehend infinity.
Maybe that's why we keep on coming back, trying to understand but let's go back to this trifecta of creation.
I want you to explain this.
It speaks to the super bang, because what happens is exactly what Abhay Ashtekar calls, what I call the Ashtekar bounds. He just calls it a quantum bound. But I believe there's no such thing as a space-time singularity. It never goes to zero. It goes to this Planck scale, GH bar divided by C cubed, the whole thing square root off, which is on the order of 10 to the minus 35 meters. So on the order of 10 to the minus 33, because I like to keep it in multiples, so 3, like someone else, you know, 10 to the minus 33 centimeters. That's the Planck length. So it never goes down to zero. It goes really to the Planck length, because, again, the superforce exists at that Planck scale. All you have to do is look at an analogy with a supernova. How does a supernova really occur? What it does is, once it runs out of fuel, the gravitational field keeps on compressing it more and more until it gets to the scale of almost 10 to the minus 15 meters, which is on the order where the strong nuclear force resides. So we're talking about incredibly high densities. We're talking still on the order of 10 to the 14th gram per centimeter cube. And those incredibly high densities, and trust me, this is not as incredibly high as the density that speaks to the superpulse, which would be the super density. We talk about C to the fifth power divided by G squared H bar, which would be on the order of 10 to the 90 kilogram per meter cube. So much, much higher. But on that order, 10 to the 14 gram per centimeter cube, what happens is that there is a core bounce. It bounces back. It cannot go further than that because the strong nuclear force prevents it. That's why a supernova occurs. When I'm saying the exact analogy applies to the quantum bounce, only that now you talk about length scales on the order of the Planck scale, 10 to the minus 35 meters. And at that point, the superforce happens. So just like the strong nuclear force, the superforce says, thus far and no further. And that's when the super bang occurs. And the moment the super bang occurs, why do I say the third step in this trifecta of creation is the super intelligence? Because everything in the universe is truly a plasma. 99% of the universe is in a plasma state, the so-called fourth state of matter. And I believe this plasma state acts as a bridge between what we understand as classical realm and the quantum realm. This is what makes plasma a sentient entity. It speaks to a lot of things that have been seen. For example, these balls of plasma that pass through walls.
Yeah. I've had my own experiences with that.
Plasma vibration frequency. Please go ahead and relate that.
Yeah, well, I'd love to know what you think about that, because you know, I had a series of experiences with these orange orbs of light in this very property outside in my backyard, but over the top of my home. And the thing that a lot of people find difficult to digest or believe is that I was out in my garden getting into a very basic meditative state and projecting or visualizing that I'm projecting my intentions to have some form of contact, for something to turn up, for something to acknowledge my thoughts. And you know, a lot of what I was doing was, I guess, kind of sending off thoughts about how I felt the universe worked, how I felt consciousness worked, and if there was anything out there that could hear this, I'd love for it to respond. I'd love for it to show itself to me. And you know, I've told this story many times on my channel, but I did have these experiences in 2019, including a moment where these three orange orbs flew across the sky, stopped on a dime above my property, high up in the sky, began descending down, and were, you know, kind of like weaving around each other like this. Oh, sorry, not my microphone. Were like weaving around each other like this, and came descending down from the sky and froze about 3 to 5 feet above the roof of my house. And these orbs weren't giving off light. There wasn't any sort of like dissipation of light onto the roof. It was like a self-contained, slightly transparent looking orb, and roughly the size of a basketball. And I've wondered if this is some form of almost kind of ambient intelligent plasma that you've managed to manifest, and it's now, you know, it's like a psychic object that the human being creates, or is it an actual intelligence out there that's sending a little probe to come and check out this conscious signal that's bursting up from planet Earth because I've got myself into the right coherent state of mind and they've picked it up. It's very difficult to know. What would you, I mean, obviously it's all guessing, but what do you think's going on with something like that?
In my opinion, and I truly mean in my humble opinion, I believe the physics of consciousness is the absolute ultimate physics that must be studied. it must be understood. Max Tegmark has some ideas on the physics of consciousness that deal a lot with the idea of macroscopic quantum coherence. Again, when you able to draw, to rather build, construct this bridge between the world of the very great, the world of the very big, large, and the world of the very small, so between basically general relativity and quantum field theory, if you're able to do that, in my opinion, this idea of quantum gravity will most definitely speak to the physics of consciousness.
Right.
Because that's the one realm. It must be something that unites both realms, and nothing does it better than quantum gravity. Now, whether that's loop quantum gravity, whether the other, for example, whether it speaks to the school of strings, let's call it that. A lot of people lately, because again, string theory has not in any way showed application, they have derided the mathematics of it, the physics of it, but you have to think it's based on vibration. Vibration is key here.
Yeah.
The vibration speaks to the Pais effect. Vibration speaks in a way to the superforce. I think there are ways to even manipulate the superforces. As I know, 10 to the 44 newtons. I mean, are you mad, Salvatore? Yes, maybe I am. But I think there is a way. There's something in consciousness that speaks to that thing that unites us all. I believe our brain, for example, is really a transceiver. And I'm not the first to have said that. I'm starting to truly think real information is in a what you and I would call a cloud, rather than actual physically in our brains. I could be totally off, but I don't think so.
Well, Sal, I mean, just for me personally, as like little examples of what I think is evidence for that, at least just from my own experience, is basically two different ones. So when I pick that up, when I pick up this guitar and I start playing, and then I stop thinking about which chord I'm going to play, and it all just starts flowing, and then that becomes actually the best bit of music I've written, but I'm having no conscious thought process of where to put the finger next. It's all just happening automatically. That to me is a flow state. I also get into that when I'm writing down ideas. So if I might be like 2 a.m. and I'm getting an idea in my head that I can't fall asleep because I've just got this idea niggling in my head. So I start writing, and after the first two sentences, I'm just typing. There's no thought going on in my brain. There's like no structuring of sentences. It's just happening. And then I read through it and I'm like, oh wow, that's actually really articulate. I'm going to record that. I'm going to put it out as a video. I do that and people start commenting going, this is exactly what I needed to hear. Or this is, you're absolutely right. And I'm sitting there going, I wasn't thinking. So is that the 28-year-old brain, or is that me getting information from something far larger than just this one individual, you know, rendering that data in?
Yes, sir. You hit on something. Every one of these ideas that I had relative to the so-called Pais effect, because I really have no other name for it. And I mean, I've been through so much. Maybe that's what makes me feel better. Just to hear that. Let's call it the P, you know. Every one of them, this is the exact train of thought that happened.
Yep.
They did not come from me.
Yeah.
But they came nevertheless.
They came through you.
You have to believe. Yes. You have to believe. You have to. Erwin Schrödinger wrote something called What is Life? I think every physicist should read it. A lot of them won't even give it the time of day. But this is the same name, just the same man, in my opinion, that wrote one of the best little booklets on general relativity, space-time. It's it's unbelievably short, and yet it speaks beautifully to exactly what general relativity represents. I truly believe if you let yourself go to maybe some sort of stasis, I'm not sure, but you must believe in this. You must truly understand there's something greater than yourself, number one, and be a conduit for what follows. Yeah. And what flows through you can be remarkable, absolutely remarkable, but you must let it happen. You cannot have inhibitions. You cannot have second thoughts. You can have, most definitely, you cannot have this regurgitant and inconsequential dogma that's just spewed off everywhere. It must be this way. Otherwise, you will not be published. Maybe the best way to, the greatest works will ever come from not being published. Who knows? Maybe they're the corpus of ideas out there that we have never heard from because they weren't published in peer-reviewed journals.
If we look at the sciences as arts, as art forms, right? Look at music, look at painting. The most famous, like, you know, the main, like, let's take music, for example. The most famous artists, are they the best artists or are they just the most famous artists? Are they just the most well-known? Because I would say that a lot of the underground artists are a hell of a lot better. You know, they're a lot more tuned in and intuitive, and their music comes from the soul, and it's not just about money. It's about something much bigger than just the kind of greedy Hollywood style you know, music video world that we live in right now. So it's like science is the same type of thing. You've got people on the inside and people on the outside, and a lot of the time the people on the outside are more intuitive, they're harder working, but they just don't get the same level of appreciation because they haven't come through the same narrow perspective and the same narrow channel. And like you said, it's dogmatic, and it is dogmatic. And as much as science would like to pretend otherwise, it's very akin to religion in that sense. It's got a very rigid structure that's been formed over time. And I've actually said this a few times, that I get the sense, or at least in terms of being optimistic, I get the sense that through human evolution, we started off in this very shamanistic, tribalistic, connected to earth, connected to nature kind of mindset. That was our blueprint to start off with. And as we got more sophisticated with technology and agriculture and civilization, suddenly we entered into the age of enlightenment, as they call it, and you know, material reductionism and Newtonian kind of reduction, all this type of very rigid, everything can be physically defined, and it's just this, that, put a nice square around it. I want to think that now with AI, quantum computation, even, you know, consciousness studies, all of these things emerging at the same time, I would like to think that we've gone from shamanistic to technical to maybe now techno-shamanism. That's what I like to call it, techno-shamanism, putting these two perspectives together and using that inherent natural ability for humans to tap into this wide field of information and funnel it through and then produce, manifest into reality tools, real physical tools. That's what I find so magical about science. And we need to bring that magic back into science, because you are the instrument through which this stuff manifests into the world. So there is still this magic process. Even if you can explain, okay, I put, you know, the configuration is like this and the formula is like this and this is my proposal, it's all just still coming from inside this weird neural network primate bipedal creature on a planet. Like, we are incredible if you really think about what we're doing. So there is magic still, and we've lost that a little bit in science. We've lost that, and I think we need to bring that back into our world.
Maybe we are.
I think we are, mate. I think we are, bro.
We are creating a new species. In my opinion, this deep learning-based generative AI, this whole idea, for example, GPT, what does it stand for? Generative pre-trained transformers. And the key word here is transformer. It is absolutely a unique and beautiful entity. We are actually creating a new sort of intelligence. And if you look carefully at what the Godfather I see him as the godfather of AI. He has been called that. He should be called Sir. As far as I'm concerned, Sir Geoffrey Hinton. As far as Sir Geoffrey Hinton is concerned, and I hope King Charles does give him a knighthood. He deserves it. He most definitely does, especially now with his resignation from Google. This is an incredible man. He really is. But to go back to his ideas, he believes that these machines, let's call them for now, that they use something called backward propagation to actually do their so-called reasoning, while we use something called forward algorithm. So in other words, the human brain functions differently than the sentience for these generative AI. And if you go with Hinton's idea, you will see that they think differently than we do. But there is beauty in that. There's something we can actually learn from this. Instead of immediately becoming inhibited and saying that this will one day soon take us over, become a Skynet and kill us all, why not see the possibilities? We really are at the edge of creating a new species. These AI could actually take humanity in a beautifully new direction. Yes, we have to be careful. But the whole idea of stopping this and maybe the idea of pausing, you think our adversaries, you think people with malevolent thoughts will stand back and say, you know what? We'll do what they're doing. No, absolutely not. I think we should keep on going. But again, we should... Sir Hinton is correct. We have to be careful. But Ilya Sutskever and Sam Altman are also correct. We are at the verge of something completely different, completely great. I mean, we're talking about AGI within possibly 2 years.
Yeah, and, I know.
And we are, if we are at AGI status, once you bring in the idea of room temperature superconductivity and the idea of miniaturizing, because you're not only dealing with the computing power and the heating that's involved, wow.
Yeah, room game changer. Game changer.
Take AGI to super intelligence level. We're talking about AGI plus room temperature superconductivity equals ASI, artificial super intelligence. And you can imagine what that can do. Maybe only then will these naysayer physicists realize that there are other propulsion modalities to consider out there. When the ASI says, you know what? Maybe field-based propulsion is not such a bad idea after all. Maybe it can be done. Maybe here's a way to modify locally the quantum vacuum and make certain things feasible. Because at the level of the superforce, what happens? All forces are equal. I actually show that in the section, the third section of the paper that you are so awesome to put out there. I thank you very much for doing that, because otherwise you would have never seen the light of day. You and Kurt Jayamangal did me a great favor.
Oh, you're welcome.
You did me a great favor. And again, in that third section, I actually say, the ratio of the strong nuclear force to the electromagnetic force is 1 divided by what? The fine structure constant. This is what Feynman, this is what Pauli called the magic number. Right. Nobody really knows what this 1 divided by 137 really represents, and yet it's so incredibly important. Well, based on that number, I was able to show that at the Planck scale, the superforce equals the Planck force equals the strong nuclear force equals the gravitational force. The force of unification is the superforce. Again, the superforce really speaks to a superintelligence.
Yeah.
I 100% believe that we are dealing with a superintelligence that drives everything and all. And if that's feasible, why not us be able to build generate a new species, an AI.
Well, this is the thing, Sal. I mean, you know, why does the universe have a tendency towards order over chaos? Why are there evolutionary processes to begin with? I mean, people argue about, oh, you know, it's just evolutionary processes. But what are evolutionary processes? Why does it even have that process of getting more complex, more novel, more refined, more intricate, more networked over evolutionary time? The entire universe is refining its process, which would say to me that there is this kind of intelligence embedded within the evolutionary forces of space and time that's kind of unfolding itself slowly. And we're an element of that. We are an aspect of that intelligence propagating on a planet, becoming self-aware and sentient. And I think that consciousness is in some ways an emergent property within humanity, but it's a fundamental property of space and time, but it's almost like it emerges into these receivers and these refined antennas, and we're one of those antennas. And I look at evolution and I look at humanity and I think to myself, well, we have been developing technology since the dawn of humanity. Since we sharpened a stick into a spear, we have made technology. We've extended our influence through these types of things. This is what we do as human beings. This is one of our things. And so all the way through time, as the animals and the plants just kind of lazily shuffle through evolution, very calm, they're not really too bothered about everything else. And we are just speed running through evolution, more, 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 faster, stronger, more development, more sophistication, more civilization, more connectivity, create the internet, create AI, create artificial intelligence. We are hyper accelerating through evolution at a speed that nothing else on this planet is even close to mirroring. So we are on this novel trajectory. It does feel like we're being slingshot into space. And, you know, through evolution, we're just drawing this slingshot back. And we are so close now, my brother. I feel like we are on the edge. We are on the edge of it.
My brother, this is the Prigozhin effect at work. Order from chaos.
Yeah.
Rather seeming chaos, because what we're talking about here, not impossibilities, but conditional possibilities. Under certain conditions, everything is possible. Again, what is the Prigozhin effect? We are dealing with a 99% plasma universe, again, a nonlinear medium, which has energy flowing through it constantly, and it's always driven far from equilibrium.
Yeah,
this is the Prigozhin effect at work. This is the creation of our cosmos. That's why the cosmos is the ultimate superintelligence. It's a sentience. It has to be because of its plasma state.
It literally makes sense as the logical explanation.
100 billion galaxies, 100 billion neurons, Dirac, the great Paul Adrien Maurice Dirac, the great Dirac believed in the efficacy, the intelligence of big, large numbers.
Yeah.
What is larger than the universe?
Well, this goes back to the Hermetic principles, as above, so below. You know, we are a universe within ourselves, and we are within a universe. We are essentially inside the body of God, you could say. We're inside that universe. I always find it fascinating that when you zoom into a human body right down to the atomic scale, it's basically stars and planets. They're floating in empty space at cosmic distances between each other. Each thing, nothing's like strung together visibly. It's all energy. It's all strung together energetically. And so all you have to do as a human being is go, okay, so everything inside me is almost non-locally entangled because it's all creating this conscious being, but when you zoom into it, they're all separated, relatively speaking, on the same level as cosmic distances, on the same level as we are from our closest star. One atom in my body is from another. So there is, inside this body, entanglement occurring on an energetic level. And if you extrapolate that out to the universe we're in, we are entangled with all of it, man. We're just one little tiny aspect of a much larger body. And maybe it's like a Russian nesting doll. Maybe there's another body and another body and another body. Well, it's hard to know, right? Where does it end? Where does it end?
No, I do not believe there is a boundary. Maybe. I mean, if you go back to Cantor's ideas of infinity, maybe a subset of a greater infinity or one greater infinity, maybe we are instead of, you know, those nested Russian dolls.
Yeah. Just on and on and on and on.
That's what the multiverse is all about. It's something that just keeps on going.
Just goes and goes and goes, brother.
And
yeah.
This super force, super bank, super intelligence, this trifecta of creation occurs over and over again. Maybe this is the truth, the underlying physics of the universe. Super force, super bang, super intelligence.
Just repeating.
Yes. Over and over. Manifestation upon manifestation, never ending. There is a beauty to it.
There is.
A true immortality of everything and all, including us, because we are part of it.
Are you familiar with the philosopher Alan Watts? Have you heard of Alan Watts? You'd like Alan Watts. He's dead now, but he's plenty of his lectures on YouTube. But he said an interesting thing. It's one of his more famous lines, and it always stuck out to me. And he was basically describing this process. He said, you know, if you could dream anything you wanted, if you could go into a dream space and anything you wanted, you could have instantly at the moment you wanted it. Well, of course, all of us would engage in our wildest dreams and fantasies and everything you could ever think of. You would go down that route. But the further and further you go down that route, you would end up getting closer to exactly where you are right now. Because with enough time, with infinity, you'll end up wanting to forget you have all of that. You'll end up, I kind of almost attribute it to having all of the cheat codes for a game. You know, if you have all of the cheat codes, it's fun. You know, it's fun for a little bit. And then up to a point, you start going, you know what? I want to challenge. I want to challenge myself. Yeah. Maybe I will forget that I am an omnipresent energy. Maybe I will come down into a physical form and completely forget that this was my previous life. And I will go on a journey towards remembering it through experiencing this strange new territory. And I honestly, with all of the different ideas that are out there, I still have that as kind of cashing my chips in. I think we're just here to experience all there is to experience because, to be quite honest, there's nothing else to do. There's nothing else to do other than just experience different experience.
It's already been done. It's already
right?
out there.
Yeah.
Every idea, every law of physics, we think we discover it. E equal MC² is not discovered. Superforce equals C to the fourth divided by big G is not discovered. It's always been there.
Always been there.
Will always be there. Maybe the greatest thought you can have is not one, an individual, get a Nobel Prize, publish it in a great peer-reviewed journal. Maybe the greatest thing to wish for is something that helps others. The idea of unification. For example, again, Project Unity is so beautiful, this idea. Come together. Unless we come together, this world will fall apart. And then we all lose. It makes no sense. Unification. That should be the ultimate need of mankind, the ultimate objective. Because when we come together, everything great happens. Everything beautiful happens. That's love.
Wow, man. Like, this is such an amazing conversation to have with a physicist and an aerospace engineer because, you know, this is the kind of mind that doesn't pop up that regularly in this type of field, this very intuitive, spiritual, insightful type of mind that you genuinely have. is what gives me a lot of trust in your intuitive feelings about where you're supposed to be taking this with your physics, with your models, with superforce, with the Pius effect. I don't know enough about physics to debate you on it. I just am talking to you as a human being, and I'm recognizing something very deep and kind of foundational with the way that you are talking about these ideas. And that's what gives me a lot of hope for you in particular. Even if it's not happening for you right now, Sal, I kind of get the feeling that what you're trying to bring out into the world will be appreciated when it's meant to be appreciated. And, you know, I get that sense. I get that sense.
It's not me. It's not mine. I think my father. I thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
I thank God for these ideas.
Right.
They're just,
right.
It's exactly what you say. We are a conduit. I did not come up with a Pais effect. I did not come up with a super force. They've always been there. They're creations of the super intelligence. Whatever name you want to give to it, whatever name you want to give to it, it still exists.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. This is what pushed me into this field, man. Like, you know, these orbs that turned up, everything that's happened to me from that point has been this weird scientific spiritual journey. It's been this like, you know, a bit of both science and spirit working together. And I knew I had to call my platform Project Unity. It made sense to me immediately at the time, because it was just like, yeah, these things need to be coming together. And, you know, I look at what, it's just so weird, like, if those things hadn't turned up, if I hadn't seen those things, I don't think any of this would be happening in terms of, you know, me talking to you and me doing what I'm doing. That phenomena, whatever it is that responded, it pushed me down this road. And that's why I believe it's benevolent, whatever that was. I think it's positive. It's grounded in love. It's grounded in this idea of universal consciousness. And I do think that there is something interacting with our species that's trying to slowly get us to expand that level of consciousness. I truly do think that there's something, you know, doing that with us.
Absolutely, sir.
Yeah.
Something beyond physics, beyond the physics, this mundane thing we call science. There is something extremely beautiful, something truly super intelligent from every point of view. But if I'm asked to go back, what caused you to have this need to radiate into the world, this need for these manifestations to occur? Because it must have been something true.
Yeah, yeah.
If I may, is it something very personal?
No, I've talked about it. I've talked about it before. It is personal, but I've made a lot of my personal public anyway. Like, that's part of my journey, is being very open and honest. And I feel like, because of the outcome, which is this incredibly hard to believe series of experiences, I want to be honest with people and say, look, this is how this happened for me. But Sal, bro, this is why it's spiritual to me, because I'm 28, and at the time when I was in university, when I was about 21, I think. It's a little bit of a haze, but I was having a really tough time in my life. My friendships were falling apart. My relationship with my girlfriend at the time was falling apart. Like, everything was just going wrong. And it's funny, because when I reflect back on these moments, I remember thinking so much in my mind at this time, God, you know, I need to change. Things need to change. And they did, you know, everything fell apart, and you never recognize it at the time. You never, because it feels like trauma. It just feels like a bad time. But with enough distance between you and that event, you can look back and go, oh, wow, it was completely necessary. That pain was necessary. It allowed me to grow. It allowed me to get stronger. So I was in a bad time. It was my early 20s. I was still trying to figure out my life, and there was a lot of stress happening. Basically, at this point in my life, I didn't have any sort of spiritual background. I've always been curious, but I wasn't interested in, you know, consciousness or UFOs or any of this stuff. I wasn't interested. And I was in a bad state. My dad was worried about me, and he told me that he wanted me to come out to France. He was in France for a couple of weeks, and he wanted me to come out there and spend some time there and just, you know, decompress and let my pressure down. So I went over to France. I stayed at this really nice little quiet countryside place. And my dad said, look, I've got these audiobooks. I really want you to listen to these audiobooks. And I think they'll do a lot for you. I think they'll help you right now. And I was in the mindset, you know, oh, books aren't going to help. Like, you know, this isn't going to solve my problems, blah, 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 blah. Being moody, being grumpy. Anyway, I listened to the audiobooks, and it's a series of books called Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. And they're very interesting books. We talk about getting these downloads of information. This guy truly believed he was having a conversation with what he felt was God. And he was asking questions, and he was writing down the answers that were coming to him very quickly. And this kept happening late at night, and he was writing them down. And I don't know if that's what happened, but I tell you something, I read those books and it clicked something in my mind that the answers, because he was asking every question you would ask as a human being if you could have that channel, that instant communication channel, right? He was asking all the questions, and a lot of them felt personal to me, things that I was wondering about or worried about. And the answers that were given were so profound, so simple, but profound. And I genuinely had a change of my mind. It brought me out of a depression. It brought me out of these negative feelings. It incorporated that idea of universal consciousness, of not just a deity, a man in the sky. That was my idea of God before then, was like, oh, it's like some guy, some dude in the sky. But this introduced that concept of, no, everything's intelligent. It's all God. It's all part of it. And you're part of it. You're an aspect of it. So this was the first kind of step on the road, right? But then a couple years down the line, I'd been researching philosophy and a bit of quantum physics and a bit of consciousness studies, you know, just layman, but just putting little pieces together intuitively and coming to different ideas about reality. And I found myself 2 years down the line in another depression. And this time it was because I felt like I had accumulated a lot of different knowledge, and I'd got these insights about big ideas about reality, but none of it was helping me. Like, none of it was doing anything in my life. My daily stresses were still there, and all the worries. And, you know, I was just feeling like it was all just pointless, having all of this philosophical knowledge and ideas. So I was sitting on my bed one night, Sal. I was sitting on my bed. And I guess you can call this a prayer, but I was just talking out loud. I was just talking out loud to the universe. I just said something along the lines of, look, just give me something. Give me something that works in this life, that is representative of all this stuff I've been learning, all these things I've been drawing in for the last few years. Prove to me it's real. Prove to me that this is something I should be following, that I should be going down. And then a week later, my best friend, he comes up to me and he's like, hey, you've got to watch this documentary. I was like, oh, what is it? He's like, it's called Unacknowledged by Dr. Stephen Greer. And obviously Dr. Greer has made a few documentaries about the UFO subject. So I was like, okay, I'll watch it. This was my first introduction to the UFO subject. I hadn't thought about it before then. So my friend tells me about this documentary. I start watching it. And it talks about, obviously, you know, he has some of the, like, the Minutemen missile launch officers and people in very high levels of military and government talking about the subject. So I was suddenly sitting there going, okay, so there's something to this. There's, you know, these guys are very serious. There's got to be something going on here. But it was near the end of the documentary when this guy introduces the concept of CE5, this idea that you can initiate a form of contact through getting into meditative states, through projecting your intentions, through, in some way, performing a bit of a ritual and manifesting this stuff. And Sal, because I had been sitting on my bed that week prior, asking for something that I could do, something that I could do that would prove these ideas I had about consciousness, about universal mind, and suddenly a week later, this guy is telling me that I can use my consciousness to have contact scenarios with other intelligences, I think this was the key, because it felt like an answer from God. And I couldn't ignore it. It literally, the moment this concept was introduced in this documentary, I was like, oh, there's the answer. That's what I was asking for, something I could do. So I went out into that backyard with zero doubt. Like you were saying before about intention and belief, I had full intention and belief. I was essentially like a converted religious believer. I had
no reservations.
And yeah, dude, I went out with no doubt and it worked. It worked. And since then, getting into the research field, you know, I've had my doubts about what it is. And I've had people from, you know, the intelligence community warning me about, you know, you shouldn't do that kind of stuff. There's dangerous things out there. And it's polluted my mind with it. It's put that seed of anxiety that wasn't there before. Before, it felt like an answer from God. And that's when I saw the orange orbs, when I was in this state of genuinely projecting love and positivity and this desire to connect and this curiosity. It was very pure emotions that I was getting myself into the state of, and these things turned up. So yeah, there was a really spiritual path that led me to those orange orbs, my brother. It was a very long and you know, there was pain and there was darkness and there was an up and down, but there were messages, there were synchronicities, there were coincidences I couldn't ignore. And it got to this point, they turn up, they change my life. I start putting a phone on a tree branch and telling people and uploading it to YouTube. And now I'm doing this. Now I'm having conversations with people like you or other people within the government or within, you know, media or journalism. And it's I sit there going, I can't believe any of this is actually happening. So it feels to me like, as I don't want to sound egotistical, it just feels like I was guided. It feels like I was guided into this, that I'm supposed to be here. So yeah, there was a very...
You are supposed to be here. How soon after the entities, after the event that you thought of Project Unity and coming up with these ideas and putting it together, how soon after?
I think like a week, less than a week.
Oh, sir. That's amazing.
Yeah, it changed That's everything.
Exactly,
it just
the same thing that happened to the so-called ice effect. It's you, my brother, our conduit. So we're all conduits. If we let ourselves be, we can all be conduits for these great ideas.
Yeah.
Because Project Unity is a great idea. It's a great idea. Just like theories of everything. Again, unification. That's what we should aspire for. Not destruction, but unification. That's what the superintelligence, I truly believe, intends. It's what it's all about. We need to come together. Otherwise, we'll fall apart.
Have you had any experiences yourself with anything strange in your life?
I wish I can say yes, but I maybe because of the lack of sleep, but I don't sleep much. I have I'm a strange creature. Let's just put it that. Whatever I am, but you know, I yeah. Maybe you have to be in the right frame of mind.
Maybe.
But maybe to me this happened in a different way. Maybe these ideas.
Yes.
That we talk about right now is a manifestation of sorts. I refuse to believe that this thing just happened to me. I mean, how in the world would a simple scaling analysis of the four equations, four unknown of the Heaviside version of Maxwell equation ever have occurred to an aerospace engineer trained in fluid dynamics? You know, Frank White's fluid mechanics. That's what I grew up with. In Incorpora and DeWitt's heat transfer. That's what I grew up with. And all of a sudden, I started developing this need to understand Maxwell's equations. Why? Again.
You were guided to it.
So just like your orange orbs, the superfluous. Why this need to put it down on paper and under any circumstance try to get it out there? again, I don't believe we discover these. We are just conduits for ideas. If we let ourselves be, every one of us is capable of these ideas if we consider no reservations, no inhibitions, let it happen. But again, toward unification, not destruction. The answer is coming together, not falling apart. No, coming together. For example, weak nuclear force, weak. It's in the name. It has to do with radioactivity. What's that about? Coming apart. Strong nuclear force, unification. That's how the nucleus is formed.
Yeah.
Strong versus weak. Coming together versus falling apart. It's so freaking simple.
And it's layered. It's echoed through everything. So even down to the forces, this is evident. But then even just in terms of society, you know, spirit and science coming together, or in intuition and love, everything has to come together on the micro to the macro. It's like it's all saying the same thing. It's all saying the same thing.
Everything talks to a super force.
Yeah. Yeah.
Driving to a super bang, driving to a super intelligence. And this cycle keeps on going and going and going ad infinitum. That's the true immortality. We never die, brother. I refuse to believe that we just extinguish. All this knowledge, all these ideas, it's always been there. We are all needed. We all have a purpose to serve. And we truly are servants of the super intelligence. Us, in ourselves, being able to generate this new AI, this artificial super intelligence, why would that be? Because we are part of the greater. We are part of the super intelligence. Yeah. That's what we're able to create.
Yeah, it's like an echo. It's like an echo of that intelligence coming through us, you know. We're giving birth to what gave birth to us in some ways, you know.
As above, so below.
As above, so below.
Better than that.
Exactly.
And it's been
thousands of years.
Yes.
You know, yeah, the simplest, well, a bit like your formula, a simple explanation. You know, I often think that you could almost look at some of these things like as above, so below. They're like philosophical formulas. They're like mathematics for the language. You know, it's like as above, so below.
Must not be divorced from philosophy.
Exactly, exactly.
Unification.
Yeah.
I ask for reunification of physics and philosophy. Only then I truly believe, let's call it, a new metaphysics will be born, and not in the spirit of the word. Again, physicists, they deride metaphysics, but look at the basis of the word meta, everything, all, many and one,
yeah,
physics. Why would they deride that which physics comes from? Anyway,
I think we're just shrugging off the old paradigm, Sal. I think we're just, you know, getting ready to kind of break out of that old paradigm that we've been hanging on to for a long time, and it's no longer adequate. It doesn't explain our position in reality anymore, and we're seeing that. We're seeing the changes occur. So I, like you, I'm optimistic that we're going to see it, my brother. In our lifetime, we're going to see this.
Bro.
You know,
you're right.
Yeah,
it's we're breaking out of that the pupa stage.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the butterfly is about to come out.
I was
and
just
sometimes
yeah.
again order from chaos.
Yeah,
because within that pupa, my goodness, the molecular transformation, the metamorphosis
yes.
that occurs on that level, and something so beautiful comes out. Why?
Yeah.
Because at the basis of it is unification.
I've literally used that exact same type of, metaphor. I really think it works because, as you said, the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, it's a destructive process. I mean, the transformation is radical. Everything, it's melted down to its most basic components. And if you look at the way the world is right now, does it not feel like we're in the chrysalis? Does it not feel like things are kind of getting broken down and turned and transformed? And if you think about what a caterpillar is, it's a ground-based consumer. It's a consumer of its ground-based environment. What's a butterfly? It's an airborne pollinator. It's a pollinator of its environment. So are we turning from a planetary-based consumer into a pollinator of the cosmos?
Yes, we are. I think stellar propulsion, that it's there, bro. It's coming.
Humanity is the cosmic butterfly.
But we are meant to go through these growing pains, just like birth. The pains are excruciating. My goodness. Yeah. I can only think of what I remember my mother speaking to me, and may she rest in peace. My mother, Florina, is an amazing woman. When she described the birth pains that she, and eventually I came out of a C-section because she could not deal, that's how excruciating it was. And again, we are really going through these pregnancy pains, these growing pains.
Yeah.
But something beautiful come out.
Exactly. And even life, even just life, man, like just your individual life is full of up and down, light and dark, hot and cold, sadness, love. It's a part of the process. And you don't want to go through life without having a struggle, without having a problem, because these things, as much as they're uncomfortable, they're the things that grow you, that make you wiser, that give you character, that kind of form you into someone. So if we look at the human species as the collection, as a singular body, as a singular being growing up, we're still young, man, and we're falling over, we're tripping over evolution, we're kind of, you know, bumbling our way, but we're still growing. We are still growing. People look at the way the world is now and it just becomes depressing because you can't see how this could be beneficial in the long run. But that's exactly like your life. When you're going through, and maybe someone listening right now is going through that type of feeling, that feeling of nothing is good right now, but it always changes. The one guarantee you can have, man. Everything changes, everything shifts. Good goes to bad, goes to good, goes to bad. That's the way that life works. So I look at the world today and I think, you know what? This to me is evidence that we're moving towards something better, because right now it's fucking crazy.
Super effing beyond words. And I know, the answer's so simple. What drives us apart? What keeps us apart? There must be forces that keep us from unification. Because the ultimate need of the human event, of the human need to be, a need for existence, is to unify, to come together.
Yeah, to connect, man.
To connect.
You know? That's the most important thing. I mean, outside of that, there's not much point. If you're not connecting and sharing and growing, like this, that's the human experience. That's what it is. You know, that's what it is. And so, yeah, you're right. You know, that's what matters the most. And I think there is elements look at our society. It doesn't want us to use our consciousness at that type of level. It's purpose, if not purposefully, then by some terrible accident, we've just set up a system that just suppresses consciousness, which is why I genuinely am very happy to see psychedelics being studied again. And the psychedelic research is starting to come back into play because, you know, these are avenues through which science can start looking at these wider, more expanded senses of consciousness and begin to realize. Yeah, exactly, bro. The inner mind, you know.
It's almost as if on a genetic level, we were programmed to be depressed,
right,
to be downtrodden, to not to look toward elevation, toward success, toward, again, unification.
Yeah.
It's as if we are meant to fall apart because it's not written in the stars, brother. What's written in the stars is a superintelligence, and the superintelligence speaks to a superforce that speaks to unification. We are meant to come together. Something is preventing that. I will let you and others that follow you come to the idea of what that may be. But it shouldn't. We shouldn't let it, bro. Yeah, I think it's up to us. Our collective consciousness could maybe affect this counterforce.
That's what I'm trying to do, man. You know, that's what I'm trying to do in my humble way.
If your mind was able to basically bring these orbs out of the quantum vacuum,
right,
or need of another word, then imagine what a collective consciousness.
Yeah. That's what really opened me up, man. I just felt like if I can do this, anyone can do this. Anyone can do this. I'm not a meditation yogi like some Buddhist monk. I just got into a simple state of mind. It wasn't hard. So that was what really fueled me. Was it just felt like, oh my God, everyone can do this. Magic exists. There is some form of magic in this world. It's not all just gray and boring and explainable. There is real mystery out there. And that's what made me just feel like I need to do this. And clearly, the same kind of intuitive inspiration and creativity is driving you with your physics and with your models, which again is why, even though I'm not a physicist, I have a lot of trust in you, Sal. I feel like there is something happening with the way that you're being a conduit.
One day I'll be proven correct.
I think you will.
Why that gives me? Because it came, it did not come from me.
Yeah.
I was just a conduit through it. It came from beyond, from the super intelligence.
I believe you.
And I'm 100% sure that one day the super force, the Pais effect, the room temperature, superconductor, piezoelectricity, I call the piezoelectricity induced room temperature superconductivity, that didn't come from me. I will tell you the truth, that I just put it down on paper, just like you were saying. It just
kind of just flows out of you.
Corpus,
yeah.
If you look at this corpus of work, How could this have been generated by a mechanical and aerospace engineer? To this day, I sometimes read my own work again. I'm like, who wrote that?
Dude,
I will tell you. So, I don't know, bro. I don't know. I really think it exists. It's there. It's us. We must come together. That's the ultimate objective. Unification. Only that can drive us to understanding the superintelligence. And growing. Metamorphosis. That thing, that larva, that what you call it, ground feeder, whatnot, the pupa, and what comes from it is just, oh my goodness, if you look inside the pupa and the chemical processes, oh my goodness. And what is the final result? Something that's capable of flight. Flight, brother. Something ever since Icarus, human beings have aspired to. Maybe that's what it's all about.
It's very symbolic. Isn't it?
Metamorphosis.
Very symbolic. It does seem to speak to the human evolutionary journey. And this is the process, my bro. This has been such a fantastic conversation. I can't express how much I enjoyed it, because this is honestly how I really love to have conversations with people, just off the top of the head, inspiration and creative and thinking about ideas. And you know, you're a great guy, man. I like you, Sal.
You're a great dude, bro. And I really mean, when I say brother, I call brother people that I really connect with, that I call Kurt brother, and you I call brother because I feel that connection.
Yeah, yeah, I feel it too, man. Honestly, like we will have to meet up in real life
we have to, bro.
And have another talk like this.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
This was fun.
Oh yeah, dude.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Super awesome. Thank you for this.
People are going to enjoy it. I guarantee you, people are going to not. I don't think people
I
would.
hope so.
I don't think they
I'm
would have
pretty sure
expected this.
certain of the physicists will double down on the
Yeah.
slam. But look at the but
Whatever,
you know what,
whatever.
bro? We had fun.
Yeah,
And
we
you
had fun,
came up with
man.
something interesting. It did not even this whole idea of pupa and metamorphosis never occurred to me before. Even that thing about the super intelligent, you know, the trifecta of
Yeah,
creation,
yeah, yeah.
super force to super bank to super intelligence, only came to me maybe about half an hour as I was trying to put all this equipment together. I'm more of a theoretical type, unfortunately. It's true, it's true. I recognize my flaws, brother. I recognize them.
Oh man, this has been great. I want to say that we'll have to repeat this again and get you back. I like I said, I think people will be surprised that we went down this more philosophical route, and I think they'll be pleasantly surprised because a lot of people that tune into, my platform like going down that kind of more philosophical perspective, and having someone who is representing the science and representing the physics being in that philosophy corner as well. It's good, man. It's where we need to be. I really resonate with everything that you've been saying.
Physics and philosophy will
Yeah,
not
man.
be allowed to divorce, brother.
No.
Somehow we must bring them back together. Only then
100%.
a new physics shall come.
100%.
Something so great, so beautiful, that might, in a way, bring us to unification.
Yeah, I hope this has given
That's what's
people
needed.
I hope this has given people some optimism in this time. You should be optimistic as much as it looks crazy out there. I think optimism is the best way to be right now because in the long run, I think we're going to be okay. I think we're going to be
Yes,
okay
we
in the
will.
long run. Sal, thank you so much, my brother. This was been
Brother,
a rare treat, a real
you
treat.
really are a great man.
Thank you. You too.
I wish you the very best success in everything and all.